welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. It's a glorious day in London, and today's guest is no stranger to the spotlight. He's got the footwork, both with a ball and on the dance floor. He's the winner of BBC's Christmas Strictly Special and has created some iconic routines. Remember Angela Rippon and that leg? But beyond the sequins and the scores, he's on a mission to change perceptions, challenge stereotypes, and make dance accessible for everyone. It's Kai Witherington.
What intro! Well,
we do pride ourselves on our intros on the Monday Mile.
I love it.
How are you, Kai?
I'm fab. I mean, what a day for it.
I mean it's April
gorgeous.
And you've got a t-shirt.
I'm wearing a linen top. It feels like summer.
I think as soon as we finish this, I'm going to put my shorts on and find somewhere to sunbathe because I have far too many clothes on currently.
Yes, yeah, it's really warm, but I wouldn't be anywhere else on the Monday Mile than here walking with you down the lovely River Thames. It's gorgeous.
It's glorious. Maybe we'll stop for a drink on the way home. But first of all, we need to earn it. We need to get the steps in.
Yes.
Kai, take me back to the start, because I know there is a trending theme of football within your family.
Yeah.
You're quite a masculine looking gent. How did one end up on the dance floor?
So my dad's from Newcastle, so he's a Geordie Lake. He played football like anyone else back in the sort of 70s and 80s as a kid. He was really, really good, and people may know someone called Alan Shearer, who's also from Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah.
And they played in the same team. So they both got scouted and ended up coming down to Southampton and playing for Southampton. So he was scouted for the Premier League team, became a professional footballer at sort of 16, 17, 18, and was sort of playing in the Premier League in the mid 90s. I was born, naturally wanted to be like dad, playing football every second of every single day as a young nutter of a kid. Basically, because I was so hyperactive and playing football, like I've got ADHD and dyslexia, but I didn't know what the hell that was as a kid. So that I was just trying to play football all the time. They sent me to my next door neighbor's dance classes. It was called Tango Tots, right?
Brilliant.
So I was learning like 1, 2, 3. They had my attention for like 5 minutes, and then I'd run round and pretend that I was like scoring a goal and like celebrating like Alan Shearer. It was only when dad would take me to football training and he would play like Elvis Presley, and Michael Jackson and Luther Vandross.
Iconic.
Bit of Take That.
Brilliant.
But it'd take that. I'd go, oh, Jailhouse Rock, that's a jive that I've been learning, and you know, Blue Suede Shoes and all that, cha 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 and all this. Then I was like, oh right. And then lo and behold, Strictly comes on the telly.
Yeah.
In 2004. And I was like, oh, that's how you're supposed to do it, because I had a really old teacher. Like he was like 60 something, 70 something. And I was like seeing like Darren Bennett and Ian Waite and all of these kind of young, good-looking blokes like dancing the cha-cha, dancing the waltz. I was like, oh, that's how it's supposed to be done. And then I sort of kind of was doing it up until 12, football and dancing. Then I got a contract offer from Southampton to play for them, and I had the British champion who wanted to dance with me. So I basically had to make a decision, because when you're young, football's on a Sunday and dance competitions are on a Sunday. So you can't do both. So I basically was like, had to tell my Geordie dad at 12 years old that I wanted to be a dancer. That's how it started.
That's an extreme contrast, football and dance. Obviously, you've got the elements of footwork in both, but I can imagine having a dad from up north in the 90s, he didn't take that lightly, like you moving to dance over football.
Do you know what? Now that I look back as someone who's still on the right side of 30, just, I look back and I go, he could have been right, really old school.
Yeah.
You know, because like he comes from an old school sort of family, and it was very much, you know, in the Northeast in the 70s and 80s, and like, this is this and this is this. And my dad has been nothing but supportive, as well as my mother, of course, specifically for my dad, because I think he knew that my heart wasn't in it. I just loved dancing that little bit more than football. He kind of saw it in me, really. But then again, he had three kids with my mum, so my brother ended up being the football player, and I think he knew that that was coming as well. So it kind of worked out all right.
That is so, so cool that he supported that decision.
He really did, yeah. It was a massive thing for me, because if I hadn't have had that support, it might have been a completely different, it might have looked completely different for me.
Were you aware at the time, because obviously dancing, being a male in dancing does come with its stereotypes.
Of course.
It can be seen as quite feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the clothing can be seen as quite feminine.
Yeah.
Was there ever a period where you had to overcome those obstacles, because you're definitely changing that perception now.
It never fazed me that I wore sparkles. It never fazed me that I wore Cuban heels. It was just what you did when you danced. And I never saw dancing as a feminine thing because I watched the Strictly guys do it. And I was like, you don't look, you know, feminine or, you know, flamboyant. You know, you are flamboyant, but in the way you move, it kind of looks quite masculine. And I always kind of wanted
masculine to... Masculine and sexy.
Exactly.
You can confirm.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of wanted to, as I said, it never really fazed me. I got ripped to shreds when I would come in on a Monday morning and I'd be fake tan from the day before. And oh, Terry's chocolate orange and da-da-da-da, you smell like a bourbon biscuit. I've been through all of it. And the thing is, when I decided to dance, I wasn't very good. So I was kind of like, if you imagine like top level, I was like very much at the bottom of like intermediate level. Like I wasn't very good, but my teacher said, no, you've got loads of potential, like knuckle down and keep going and we'll find you a good partner. Because obviously you need a partner. By the time I was at the beginning of like year seven in senior school. And then by the time I got to year 11 and was doing my exam, I'd won the world championship. So it was kind of, it was like a whole school all the way to the end of my year 11 was like a big journey for my dance career.
So you wouldn't say it was something that you picked up naturally, but you loved it.
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what it was? It was the music. The going to training and hearing the music and like doing my feet in the passenger seat of the car going 2-3 cha cha cha. It was the music that kind of, it just made sense in my head. Maybe because of my dyslexia and ADHD or whatever, that it just kind of made sense for me in my brain. Yeah, I was, you know, that kid with a hairspray bottle in the front of the mirror doing, you know, all this and pretending I was Elvis Presley and then putting it into my actual dancing. So yeah, that's where I found the love for it. Yeah.
Does it still get you excited now when a tune like that pops?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do the other stank face. And you're like, oh. Yeah, I love what dance does to you as a person. Like, I'd struggle to find anyone that's danced under their own accord and not enjoyed it.
Okay, on your best day, describe that feeling, that high.
So cliche. I feel like you can't describe it because it's so outer body experience. I'll tell you what it's probably like for you, the equivalent. Okay. It's like when you're snowboarding and you're just not thinking of anything. And someone asks you, what do you think of? And you think of nothing, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all, what's the word? Flow state. Flow state.
You're just in.
You're just there and you're just doing it and it's rehearsed to within an inch of its life. Your partner's doing everything that you want them to do, like the snowboard, you know. Everything's just flowing and feeling fantastic and the music's great and the crowd are loving it. That's kind of how best I can describe it, is everything just falls into place.
But you know what I think so special about dance from an outside perspective? So with snowboarding, football, you know, football less so, but you still need a pair of football boots, your football, a goal, a team. There's a lot of moving parts. Same with a snowboard, you need a snowboard or the gear, a helmet.
Yeah.
Whereas dancing, you actually don't need anything.
No.
It is pure self-expression.
Yeah.
Of the purest form.
It is. Bit of music. Turn the radio on or something.
You'd think I was a dancer explaining it like that.
I know you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. We know. I'm definitely not.
Well, I don't know.
It's on a table in Mykonos.
In Mykonos. Or in the mountains somewhere after a day of skiing.
Yes, yes. Maybe next week. That's not happened yet.
Exactly.
This year.
Exactly.
Talk to me about the physicality of dance, because I can imagine from just my experience in Mykonos on tables, that is quite enduring. So as a base level, what sort of routine do you need to install to be fit for your job?
I'm a big believer in training specifically for what you do. So for example, if I've got a tour coming up like I do, I didn't mean to just randomly plug that then, by the way.
Great plug.
As a good example, May and June, I believe that dancing is the best way to train for dancing. There's no point in me going to the gym and running, you know, half marathons and 5Ks and 10Ks thinking when I get fit for dancing, because it's completely different to what I need my body to do. So I need my body to be quick and reactive and sharp, dance ready. There's no point in me starting running. Yes, running's good for your physical fitness and all that. I'm better off going into the dance.
And do you love that?
So, yeah.
Do you?
I love
that
it,
sort of training that you need to essentially survive a tour, because your body's kind of got to be bulletproof in essence. For, you know, a 5-week run, dancing every day.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy the process of getting fit to dance
and
doing it through dance? That must be cool.
I think the rehearsals is the coolest process. Yeah. Like I said to my director choreographer the other day, I was like, I can't wait to get in the studio, because then you feel like we've got 3 weeks rehearsal and it's like you feel dance ready. You're getting a sweat on, you're going through 10 t-shirts in a rehearsal because you're just sweating so much. And you feel great because you're dancing to the music that you've always wanted to dance to. And for me, it's like heaven because I'm doing what I've always wanted to do. I'm dancing all day with my mates who have got in my cast and the music that we've chosen. But yeah, you need to look after your body. I'm a big believer in recovery and ice baths. And it's not like, so my brother's obviously a professional footballer, right? He's got a few days recovery in between games. So they might have Saturday, Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
For us, as you know, we're night after night, sometimes with double shows.
The double show blows my mind. That's like marathon style endurance.
It is.
Because 2 hour show?
2 hour show.
Times two, that's a marathon.
2 hour show with a 15 minute interval. Maybe with a couple of hours in the middle break.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's almost harder because then you get like the slump.
You go down and then you got to come back up.
So. How do you manage your energy? And it would be the same on Strictly, right? When you head out, you practice, you've got a full day to wait until you're on the live show. How do you find a way to balance that energy and be warm and ready to go again? Because I find that really hard to say, let's speak in running terms. Say you were to run a mile, stop for 2 hours, and then run another 2 miles. It's quite tricky to find that like internal drive to be on again.
Coffee.
To be fair, we're both friends over a coffee, aren't we?
Over a coffee,
all
yeah.
three.
Absolutely, all three. I think it's just, a lot of it's mental. A lot of it's just like, I'm good, I'm ready to go, I know what I need to do. You warm up with ample time, you give yourself enough time to warm up. In my case, you're with your partner and you're getting ready or with your cast or whatever. And you just go again and just, you have no choice because you know, 1,000 people or whatever, however many people in the audience have come and paid to see you, you've got to give them a shot. That's a good way to remember actually. This is a bit of advice I got given from Tom Hiddleston. I'm going to drop a little name bomb.
As you do.
He came to watch Strictly and I had a good chat with him and I said, is there any advice? Because I'm a big fan of yours and da da da. He was like, always remember the next audience that you perform to, they're seeing it for the first time. You only get a chance to make a good first impression once.
That's so true.
So that's great advice.
That's strong. That's given me like goosebumps feel through my veins.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just dancing. That's everything.
That's like the pressure of being on this podcast. Yeah. You can only leave your impression once, Kai.
Exactly.
So what can people expect from you on your first ever solo tour?
The thing is, it's my first ever solo tour, like you said. So I want people to kind of get to know me and feel like they get to know the real me by the end of it. I was on Jeremy Vine the other day and he said something really interesting that we always say as pros, but it's interesting when someone else says it. It's like, you see them on Strictly, you see them on the telly, but you actually don't get to see them in the flesh. And you see how we all do when we watch dancing, how amazing the dancing is in person. It's like when you go and watch a sports game and you go, oh my God, you can see it in person, how quick they're moving. Or if you watch Djokovic play tennis and you see it in person, you're like, oh my God. So that's kind of what
the physicality.
Exactly. And you want people to be there live and in the flesh and see it and experience it. And I want people to come away with hopefully having a positive experience. And we're going to be talking about a little bit what we've been talking about here, like my life, how I got into dancing, how I got into TV, my influences, my inspirations, and things I'm passionate about. And
so it really is like a lovely little evening with Kai.
But with a few little dramatic moments here and there. I always say if I can make the audience laugh and cry in the space of 2 hours, then I've done my job. So I want to take them on a little bit of an emotional ride. Okay, so we got peaks and troughs. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I look forward to it.
Thank you.
I'll have to come and find you somewhere.
You will.
Across your multitude of locations.
Yeah.
Now, we touched briefly on routine, being fit to dance. Mm. We can't neglect the fact that we've seen a little bit of a body transformation. Kai, 6 months ago, looked like a slightly different person to the gentleman I'm walking with today.
Yeah.
What's gone on and what's happened?
It's one of those where I was so fit as a kid.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not ashamed to say that I was the guy in school that was the county champion of running, was the captain of the football team, swimmer, played everything, was good at everything, and I was so fit. And then I basically stopped dancing for a year when I was 18, and I kind of put a little bit of weight on, and it kind of never went. I couldn't get it off.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a way to get it off. After sort of last year and, you know, I didn't get a partner on Strictly, so I had a bit of a reflection moment, and it was kind of the best thing that could have happened to me. There's a good little nugget for you. Setbacks are just setups for comebacks.
Oh, wow. How's that for some inspiration?
So sometimes you need a little reflection moment, and I kind of had a look in the mirror and I was like, yeah, I'm not really happy with this. And then the main thing I did was diet. I really just ate good, looked after what I was putting in my body basically. And I was like, you know what? I'm a dancer. I want to look like a dancer. I want to feel good in what I'm wearing. Like even what I'm wearing now, I probably wouldn't have worn this like 6 months ago because I'd have been like, no, I need to wear black. But it's about being comfortable in your own skin.
And as a dancer, that's got to be so important. Because you guys half the time are wearing lycra, half naked on national television.
Exactly. You know, Vito and Nikita next to you, who are, you know, these lovely European ripped golden tan bodies. And, you know, you got this lanky English guy that needs to sort of keep up with them and look good. So you want to feel like you can give the best of yourself. The classic saying of what you put in, you get out of it, right? So
yeah,
if I work hard and work on looking good, because that essentially is what we do, is we try to look good. We move to music. That's basically what we do and try and look good while we're doing it.
What was your secret to actually committing and getting that done? Because a lot of people listening to this podcast will be able to relate. It's something that everyone has or maybe once has struggled with. So making that decision and committing to that change is, it's quite a big thing to do.
The biggest thing for me, and it's kind of a bit, maybe it's a bit extreme, but I don't know. I took a photo of myself after a gym session in like September.
Yeah.
And I haven't like put it out there or anything, but I have it, put it this way, I was in between 15 and 20 kilos heavier than I am now.
Wow.
I look back at it now and I go, crikey Moses, like you were dancing like that. Point is I had accountability.
Yeah.
So I looked back and I was like, come on, you can't go on like this. You need to hold yourself accountable. And at the end of the day, we can cry and we can moan about, oh, I can't lose weight and this and this and this. It is down to you and it stops with you. There's no one else's fault. You're putting on weight or whatever. So for me, I was like, listen, no one else is going to do it for me. So I might as well do it myself.
Mentally, you must feel so much better.
So much better. You feel comfortable in your own skin. That's been something I've been looking for a little while now. I feel like I'm in the best sort of mental, physical state that I've been in since I was probably 17.
Wow.
So I feel really
good. That's unreal.
So I feel great.
We have Racehorse vibes looking ahead to next year. I mean, last year you had a stellar end of season.
Yeah, it did. I did all right. Because I've done two Christmas specials. I've won them both. I'm starting to feel a little bit like Michael Bublé, just coming out of Christmas and appearing and doing well. The Christmas special, like, it was great. Obviously, I had Taste, the first ever drag queen on the show, and it's just fantastic. Taste was such a great person and so fun, really good at dancing. The first words Taste said to me when he walked in the studio was 5, 6, 7, 8, let's do this.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, this is the energy I want.
Energy is everything, isn't it?
It totally is.
The racehorse energy going into the 2025 season.
Absolutely.
The Brit is back on the floor.
Oh.
Give him a partner.
We'll see. I mean, we need to be announced back first. We don't know if we're back yet, but we're hoping so. It'd be nice to get back on the floor and get in the mix again.
Go on, Kai.
It'd be nice.
Go on, Kai.
Get me all fired up then.
Yeah, I'm fired up. I've also seen you've been doing a bit of work with Angela Rippon.
Yeah, the Ripster.
Fill me in.
So, can you feel me? Sorry, I just took me to that. I haven't heard anyone say that for a long time. We basically discussed about doing a
had a
campaign.
Really long leg.
She had a really long leg and a really flexible hamstring. And she was like, I think I found my calling since Strictly. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, well, we should get the nation dancing. And prior to this on the show, I'd said to her about me trying to get dance into schools. And she kind of went one step further and was like, why just schools? Why not the whole nation?
That's punchy.
It is. It was a big thing. And she contacted everyone in the government, the NHS, got them all on board. We basically got dance recognized as an official form of exercise, which I can't believe it wasn't in the first
place. That is absolutely ridiculous.
It's crazy.
How is that?
I know. It's mad. You only have to look at the Darcy Bustles or the ballerinas of the world and look at the amazing shape they're in. Of course, it's an exercise. But now they're officially prescribing it to people as an exercise. So that's a massive achievement that we've done, first of all. Second of all, she officially now has a national, you know, we have like National Women's Day, we've got a National Dance Day.
And that was created by Angela.
Correct, yeah.
There was not a national dance. Wow, you
there
guys
was,
have.
No, there was an international one, but there's now a national one. It's on March the 2nd. So that was when the campaign was launched.
Okay.
And she said, I'll try and do her accent. The Guinness Book of World Records is far too expensive, but I'm sure that we would have had a mild earthquake on March the 2nd because everyone was dancing. I spent the day with her. We went to the Royal Academy of Dance. We went to the National, where did we go? The Royal Ballet. We went to Pineapple and did a class for people who are visually impaired. I mean, there was so many people dancing on that day. It was insane. I'm trying to take it now a step even further at my initial idea, which she's helping me with, and trying to get dancing into the school curriculum.
And how do you go about something like that?
You get Angela Rippon to use her contacts.
Knock on a few doors.
Basically, yeah, the credit is hers. She's done all the groundwork of this.
Unearthing.
Yeah, exactly.
She's digging.
She's basically bashed the door down.
Yeah.
And now we need to walk through it and kind of get this over the line. We've had meetings with Wes Streeting, meetings with Brigitte Philipson, who's the Minister for Education. And then hopefully we're going to have a meeting with the Prime Minister as well to just be like, listen, there's no downside to this. All kids dance anyway on TikTok. So why not regulate it? Have it in school. It's amazing for their physical health, their mental health, their social, because you're doing it to music, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
So I was in Bedford yesterday teaching Charleston to a bunch of students, and you know, if they were on a treadmill for an hour,
yeah,
they'd have been like, crikey, I might as well done a treadmill for an
hour. That would be so boring.
Exactly. So we did Charleston for an hour to music, you know, to different Strictly songs and blah blah blah. Point is, they came away sweating but yeah, not feeling like they've done anything, because they're having so much fun doing it. And that's the point, you know, if you have a student that enjoys what they do, you're gonna have a better student. You know, if you've got someone, I remember being in maths and stuff, and I was like, God, it's just so uninspiring to me. But someone made it interesting later on in school, and I was like, oh, it's actually, if you make it fun, you can get more out of the student, especially someone who's got dyslexia or ADHD, yeah, or learning difficulties. You're going to get a better student if you make it more interesting and fun. And dance is all of those things anyway. So I think there's just no downside.
It sounds like a win-win situation, and
yeah,
something that can be implemented in not only just a fun, but creative way as well. So it does give room for those with learning difficulties or lack of rhythm, in my case, to excel and understand music also.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to give you the opportunity to present in one line the reason why dance should be pitched and introduced to the UK government, what would you say?
There is no downside. It's been proven and is constantly being proven to be the best form of exercise for all of your health. You're investing in your, as I would say, your well-being pension pot. It's a prevention thing, especially for people who are older. It's preventing them from getting dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. It's so good for your motor skills, for your brain, for your physical health, for your mental health.
This is way more than one line, Kyle.
Sorry, I'm sorry. It's just a really long line. But basically, there's no downside. And we should get the nation dancing. We should get the kids dancing again.
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to go dancing. That's excited me.
You always dance. You dance anyway.
No, dance right anyway.
That was terrible, but yeah. We're a bit more like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever walking down the
road. Kai, after this, I know you're off to play a little golf.
Yeah.
Talk to me about life outside of dance.
Well, it's what you just said. It's golf, basically. That's my life outside of dance. People, you know, do, you know, paddle, which I like. I like paddle. We play paddle a couple of times. I just love golf. I love
Why?
Golf.
What do you love about it? Because again, that is so, so different to dance.
Yeah.
But there's a fair few dancers that play golf. And
yeah,
it's one of those sports, a bit like paddle. It's like cool and trendy to exactly. golf.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But you're not on trend golf. You are a golfer.
Yeah.
there's a difference.
I've gone a step further and taken it a little bit more seriously. But I've got a YouTube channel with my brother called Wid Golf, and we're basically just having fun with it. But the reason why I love golf is just, as you just said, it's so different from what I do. And I think that's why I like it. You're outdoors.
Yeah.
You're in nature. You know, you're whacking a ball around a field, yes. But as you've played golf as well, you know, when you hit that one shot, it's like, oh, this is why I do it. But I'm kind of obsessed with the game. I come from a competitive family anyway. So if there's a little bit of competition involved, I kind of love that aspect of it. But I also, the thing with golf is you're just competitive with yourself. You can't blame anyone else. You've got no dance partner to blame. It's you, a golf club and a ball, and you've got to put it in the hole.
Do you almost like the simplicity
yeah.
in that? In you're not relying on somebody else
exactly.
to perform
yeah.
as well? Because I guess you've spent a large portion of your life growing up dancing with someone and relying on them and their ability and communication. But with golf, it's just you and the ball.
Absolutely. And you get to play these amazing courses, but ultimately it is just you and the ball, and you've got to practice and get better. And if you don't practice and get better, you're not going to get any better. Simple as that. It's like anything. I'm very fortunate. I have an uncle that lives in America, and I get to go there sometimes and play these amazing courses. And you know, you're in the sun and you're in shorts and a t-shirt, and it's just lovely. I just love what the game is. It's you're constantly 18 times. There's a challenge put in front of you, different obstacles in the way, and you've got to try and overcome that. You've got to kind of, you know, sort of navigate your way around and fix these problems as you go. And it's kind of like a little problem solving thing, I guess, if you think about it in that way. But I just love it. I love the social as well. I love playing with my mates, and it's just great fun. It's just really, really good fun. So that's what we try and do on the YouTube channel as well. We've had some good guests so far. We've had Justin Rose.
No way.
Pretty good starting
Wow, he was straight
our,
in.
He was our first guest, which I was like, I think we peaked a bit early. But then we got Anton on.
Brilliant.
Anton de Beck, obviously. And we've got a few more coming.
Sorry. Okay, cool.
After you.
We will keep an eye.
Yes, keep an eye, Kai. Yeah.
It's all happening.
It is, but I love it.
Kai, we are on the Monday Mile podcast, so we like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like Monday?
Yeah, I do. It's a new opportunity for you to have a fresh start in the week, I think. I've always liked Mondays. In school, I hated it because I knew that school
the worst was the Sunday night.
Sunday night when you go, oh, I haven't done my homework and Mrs. such and such is going to kill me. But no, I like it. I'm like, it's a new way to kind of, you know, get the day started, get the week started.
It sounds like, in general, you've got Monday dialed.
Mm.
But not every Monday is a great Monday, right? So on occasion, have you ever experienced a time where you've struggled to be inspired or motivated? And in that instance, how did you turn it around?
It's interesting. Like a lot of the days I feel like sometimes in the morning, just I'm feeling really slumped and really like knackered from the day before or whatever, from dancing or whatever it may be. Sometimes I get up, you know, the alarm goes and you snooze it again. And you're just in this sort of like 20 minute kind of slump period where you're like, oh God, I've got to get out of bed. And you know, I've got to have a shower because I'm running out of time and da, da, da. The best way I've found to kind of get out of that is literally go to your phone and put on a banging song.
Oh, go on.
Honestly, it works. I've been in a real like, God, really not feeling it today. And I whack on, coming out of my cage and
I'll be doing just fine.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, let's have the day. And then I'm like, oh, and then I'm away. Genuinely, it works. Like Kings of Leon or whatever gets you going.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely just put on music, blast it. You know, don't get complaints from the neighbors. But that's a real thing for me that really just gets me going. Because you start singing, you start having a bit of a boogie, you're feeling yourself while you're brushing your teeth. And then all of a sudden you're out and you're away and you're in a better mood. So music for me is a big key to my life in terms of work, in terms of getting me going for things, getting me inspired and stuff like that.
So, it is such a powerful tool to change a mood, to change the energy.
It is.
I needed to hear that, I reckon.
It's a good one. You should try it.
I've been putting the news on and I can tell you that doesn't inspire me to get out of bed.
Yeah, and this is, so that's the do's. The don'ts I would recommend are don't turn on the telly. And don't sit on your couch. Don't sit on your phone. Don't sit on the couch. You know, you whack on BBC News or whatever, you know, you want to watch Piers Morgan or whatever, you're in for trouble because you sit down and you go, ah. Oh.
Yeah, the slump.
The slump. Got to get yourself going.
The
don't
engine.
Sit down.
Exactly. Engine fired up.
You've slept for 6, 7, 8 hours. You're enough. You don't need to sit down. Get up and get moving.
Yeah. And lastly, Kai, if you could leave our listeners with a life motto or quote to inspire them to chase their dreams, what would it be?
This is so cliche again.
I love your little cliche bangers though. You've already given us two real strong ones.
Okay, I'll try and leave you with a third. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And it can be you if you put the work in. Nothing gets given to you. Sometimes the door won't be open. You know, the door won't get open for you. You've got to bash the door down. Sometimes you've got to kind of go and work so hard, whatever job it may be, whatever you're trying to achieve in life, have a mild obsession with what you're doing. Otherwise, you won't get anywhere. I guarantee you all 20 of the Strictly Pros on the show have always been obsessed with dancing, and that's why they're there. I would say you are capable of doing anything you want to if you work hard enough and if you want it enough.
Wow. Kai Widdrington. That, I can confirm, was the third banger. Pure inspiration and exactly what we all needed to hear this Monday morning. Kai, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. Listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you are subscribed. The audio drops every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for the early risers. So get subscribed, tune in, and walk whilst you listen. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap.